All right, everybody, welcome to the Rametown Riot, and that was truly a very inspirational moment in sports. If you guys haven't heard, what we just played you was a tribute the Miami Marlins did to Jose Fernandez, their star young ace of a pitcher who passed away on Sunday in a boating accident, and that was a trumpet tribute they did during for Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and I really thought it was a very inspirational moment, and just something unique in sports. But a little backstory, Jose Fernandez, he was the young 24-year-old ace pitcher for the Miami Marlins. He was killed in a boating accident at 2 a.m. in the morning in Miami. And he crashed into a patch of rocks. He was ejected from the boat, and all three passengers on the boat passed away. Just truly a tragic accident that happened. And really, really affected a lot of people. And one big thing that me and Bob are going to spend some time on this because we were so fascinated is because the reaction after the passing was truly quite remarkable with the reaction of the Miami community. And also, they skipped this first game of the series on Monday night against the Mets, and when he was supposed to start, and then they played the second game on Tuesday night, and it was just a really emotional game, tons of tributes. We'll break down a little bit of the tributes. So, Bobby, I want to get your initial thoughts on this tragedy.
Well, that's a good way to put it, Matt. It's an absolute tragedy. I mean, anytime a young person dies, has a deep effect on a lot of people. But I think in particular when you're dealing with a person that's in the public eye, a young athlete, a superstar, it just kind of shines a light on lost potential, and how much we lost, and everything that we're hearing about him. He just seems like he was a person that really lifted up the community around him. A ton of fun. Everyone in baseball loved him. He had so many friends, and just made the game fun for everybody. And I think in his life in general, he just kind of picked it up and lightened up the load that we all have to deal with. And it's a shame to lose somebody so young and so great. And big loss for sports, and big loss for his family, for his friends, his community, and for all of us. A lot of people looked up to him, and he was one of the brightest young stars in the game. Just a shame to lose him.
I agree with you, Bob. And he was such an inspiration to so many people, or not just in the United States, but around the world. And one big reason why, I'll give you a little bit of his backstory. He's from Cuba, and he defected from Cuba four times. When we say defect, he tried to escape from Cuba four times. Three of those times, he was caught and sent back and imprisoned. And one of those times, when he was 15 years old, Bobby, he saw his mom fall overboard with all these waves crashing in, and he jumped into the water and saved his mom's life at 15 years old while trying to escape Cuba to the United States, and then got imprisoned afterwards. And then after this, on the fourth try, he succeeded at age 15, and then got back, settled in the Tampa Bay area. But you're looking at a 15-year-old kid that escaped from Cuba and really got to live that American dream. A lot of people, the people that talked about him are in Cuba, a lot of people, they call him the American dream. It's like he's seen so much already at this age, and he's gone through so much. And the people, when they talk about his charisma and his enthusiasm, all these traits he brings to the game and his personality, I just think it's quite remarkable.
Absolutely. Absolutely remarkable. And coming from his backstory, you can just tell baseball in particular is a game that that is dry a lot of times, I feel like. And it doesn't seem like so many times it seems like the guys are just out there doing business. But you could tell when you're watching this guy that this is just a man that purely loves the game. It didn't matter if he was getting – he would have been in the Florida – if he wasn't a professional, he would have been in the Florida area playing baseball with his friends all the time. It was what he loved to do, you know. And
that's a great way to put it. He truly did love the game.
I think that's why he connected so well with Barry Bonds when he was on the Marlins. And so many other players just respected him and loved him and looked forward to competing against him and his loved by his teammates. It's just because it's a guy that's having so much fun. And, I mean, it's a shame. I'm not sure that there's any poetic justice in this. It just, like, it seems like maybe having too much fun was his downfall. In the long run, because there was some problems, controversy with, like, how dying in a boating accident is tragic. Everyone loves being out on boats, but it's a situation that you have to take extremely seriously because it's extremely dangerous.
Well, the difference was this is at 2 a.m. This boating accident was at 2 a.m., so it's pitch black outside. The toxicology report has not been released yet. However, the police and the Coast Guard said that there was no alcohol or substances found at the scene.
I believe there was some evidence of them leaving a bar, of at least a couple people that were on the boat leaving a bar.
A popular Miami bar. I heard that as well, but did you hear if they drank it all there? I didn't hear anything about that.
How are you supposed to be able to tell this sort of stuff? I don't know. But they're out on the boat, they're having fun, they're driving faster than they're supposed to be, and they have an accident. I don't want to get into logistics, exactly what happened, speculations as exactly what happened in the
I agree, Bob. And one thing that I really want to get into here is if you watch this game Tuesday night, it was the Mets versus Marlins, first game, the tributes that were to Fernandez were fantastic. The Mets, they're a first-class organization, the way they pay tribute. And throughout the game, the Marlins players, they all wore number 16 in Fernandez jerseys, the entire team. And I thought maybe the most inspirational moment that I think we're going to see a replay of this for a while was D. Gordon, one of his best friends on the team. D. Gordon's a really fast player, really good player. However, does not have any power. Has not hit a home run all season. So his first pitch of his first at bat, he stands right-handed, which he's a lefty, and he tries to stand exactly like Fernandez stood in the batting box, all these things, and they took a pitch. His second pitch he saw, he went back to his normal stance. Hits a home run almost upper deck. Upper deck. Like, what? This guy hasn't hit a home run all season. All of a sudden, he gets inspiration to hit one that far. And then he has emotion, his raw emotion, running the bases after this. He had, it looked like he was crying around the bases. A true emotional, raw emotion cry. And it was just fantastic. I mean, it was just one of these moments that kind of gives you chills when you see something like that.
I don't know what to add. Maybe the only time when it's acceptable to cry in baseball.
I don't know the answer to that one either.
I don't know. I mean, that story almost makes me cry. It's incredibly inspiring. Let's just run some stats on Fernandez here and just the type of player that he was and the type of player that the game is losing. He had a 2.86 ERA this year. Absolutely remarkable. 12.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is the highest rate in major leagues by an entire strikeout this season. Two-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year 2013. He almost won the Cy Young when he's 21 years old. So it's just big star in the game.
He was the second best player.
A lot of people's favorite player in Major League Baseball. Like he was a huge star, and it's just
he was one of the most popular. Him and Stanton are by far the two stars on the Marlins, and he is maybe the most popular one down in that area. They are both not from the United States, Stanton and Fernandez, but it's just crippling for that franchise as well. It's so hard to find an ace pitcher. And then just something to go out so tragically like this. I mean, it's just something no organization could ever prepare for. However, looking at the positive things now is I think the tributes that were paid to him and are continuing to be betrayed to him were really remarkable. And today they had his funeral, and this just came in that they had an open viewing of Hernandez, and the doors opened at 5 p.m. Eastern time today. And for the last 5 hours, they're still open, and there's still like three blocks of people waiting in line. So over 10,000 people have revolved through there just to see an open viewing of him. It's pretty remarkable.
I have nothing else left to add. Just great loss, and best wishes to everyone involved in his community, his family, and the people that knew him, and we'll all remember him fondly.
I agree. And hey, since we're talking about baseball, let's move on to something a little lighter.
This is the time of year when I get excited for baseball, Matt.
We haven't talked baseball much on this podcast, but hell, the playoffs are up. So there's only like 5 to 6 games left remaining for teams in the regular season. All the things are starting to unfold. But there is some really close wild card battles still happening. I think that's the most engaging thing we have. And so, Bob, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the Orioles and the Tigers are in a heated race. There's one game separating them right now, I think.
One game, and the Tigers are winning right now. But the Orioles have the lead in the wild card. But the Tigers are tonight.
Who are they playing? They're playing the Indians right now. Yes. The Indians right now. And I don't know. I'm excited about that, man. I love to see the Tigers in the playoffs. I think they obviously have got the hitting and the type of team that could make some noise come playoff season. Their division's not quite as impressed with everyone in. I mean, obviously, Boston looks like complete studs, but I just feel like if Detroit's able to get in there, you never know. So I'm excited about that.
If you can get in with Verlander and their rookie Fulmer,
This
gives you two pitchers, and I think that's what the MLB is. Two pitchers in the postseason, you can win it all. Two studs.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to get this playoff picture that me and you were talking a little bit before this podcast is the Texas Rangers. They're going completely untalked about in the AL. Everybody's talking about Boston. And they quietly have 93 wins, second-best record in the MLB, and they have two stud pitchers. Two studs. You have Hamels and you have Yu Darvish. Two pitchers that can completely shut another team down. I think they can make a lot of noise.
They're looking at playing the Dodgers in the first round, is that right?
No, Dodgers would be NL, so they're AL. So they would. I don't know who they'd be playing right away. It depends how it all works itself out. Because you have the two wildcard teams battle to move on to the next.
Of course.
And then they would match up however that works. So we'll see the bracket when it all unfolds.
Did you see that sneak by Pedroia? Not a sneak. What would you call it? Just a play by Pedroia the other day when he's rushing home plate and he evades the catcher twice. He, like, runs completely around the catcher, does a 180, and then, like, tries to jump over the guy and touch home plate and got it for the game-winning run.
No, what? How the hell did I miss this?
I don't know. One of the most remarkable baseball players. Pedroia is an incredible athlete.
He's great.
Baseball player.
He's a great defender.
He's great offensively, too,
but I show your athleticism. A lot of it's related to defense.
Absolute stud. Yeah, man, you got to watch this. It was like some schoolyard. Everyone's going to be emulating this for.
Well, damn. Forever. All right, well, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. I was hardly ever that impressed with baseball players that I wasn't with this one. It was incredible. Yeah.
All right. I'll have to check it out because I know, Bob, you're not the biggest baseball enthusiast, but damn, now I'm excited to see this.
Okay.
All right, so another one, we're talking about the NL now. We have the wild card race because most of these division championships are all locked up right now. But for the wild card race in the NL, you have the Giants, who have collapsed pretty much in the second half since the All-Star break, are fighting off the Cardinals. The Cardinals, the historic Cardinals, are always great and make the playoffs. Both these two teams, Giants and Cardinals, and the Cardinals are one game back right now and to make this wild card race. So I think that's really fascinating.
Definitely.
Yeah, you got two teams that the last 10 years, I would say, or at least for sure the last like 6 to 8 years, have been those two teams that kind of set the tone for the playoffs, right? Especially in the NL, with the Giants pretty much having a dynasty, and then the Cardinals always being good. I think it's really unique. So yeah, anything else you want to talk about in baseball here? Just sum it up. We're just talking about quick standings. We're not the biggest baseball guys, but you know, I'll give you a quick run through.
Well, I think the Cubs are definitely worth talking about a little more than we've been on them. I think
101. They just won the 101st game last night.
First time they won 100 games since 1935. Whew.
They got a great. They're by far the favorite. 1935.
I think my grandpa was born in 1935. Yeah, because he's 91 right now. No wait,
that's not.
Damn, he was born in Okay, so he was a boy when this.
Yeah,
this
he's a boy.
Game was going on?
Because my grandma was born in 36 and she's 80 something. So
there you go. So this has. So last time the Cubs were this good, your grandma was not alive yet.
Correct.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. So yeah, and I know you. Sent me some information. You were pretty impressed with a certain general manager.
Yeah, I want to talk this. So the Cubs. If you guys know, you follow the Cubs at all, or you follow baseball, the Cubs have the best GM in baseball, Theo Epstein. Okay. He's insane. He's so good. If you don't know much about Theo Epstein, he was a 28-year-old that got hired with the Boston Red Sox as their GM, the youngest one, and he completely turned that organization around, brought them 2 World Series. He had a lot of turmoil. Ended up not really liking his job, Boston, so he ended up leaving there for Chicago. And the last 5 years, he's turned the Chicago Cubs franchise. That was a complete mess. Complete mess. Overpaying so many people and turned them into the favorites of the World Series this year and the favorites, I would say, for the next 5 years while he's there. They have so much young talent, and their pitching staff is so good. And Theo Epstein just signed another 5-year contract. And so why I want to talk with this, Bobby... You've been so praising Bill Belichick. Everybody praises Bill Belichick. But you've been praising Bill Belichick.
He deserves
the praise,
yeah.
He deserves it. How he is so influential in all these things. So I'm going to pose a question to you. Do you think that Theo Epstein or Bill Belichick is more important? Who's the most influential non-player in between those two?
Let me pose it in a way that I can understand, because I don't know the history on Theo Epstein as well. So I will point out some things that Belichick has done, and then you tell me if Theo Epstein if you think that he is as great in the same manner. Is that fair?
Fair enough. We're comparing a GM versus a coach, but we can try. I mean, we can try it out, right?
All right. How about sustained success? Does he have the same record of sustained success as Bill Belichick, or at least as impressive, saying that Bill Belichick has been able to maintain the Patriots for about 15 years now as being a top contender in the league? Remarkably impressive considering all things considered.
Okay, so how I fill out the answer, it's going to be harder because we're comparing Major League Baseball to NFL, and they're just two totally different dilemmas here. I mean, baseball, you play so many games, and there's so many other factors that go into it, the pitching staff. But I would say he's been general manager for now for 14 years, and he's brought 2 World Series to the Red Sox, and if they win one this year, that'll be 3 in 14 years. So I feel like it's pretty sustained, and the Red Sox were in contention most of those years he was out there. It's just such a hard thing to compare.
Okay. Another question for you. Bill Belichick would be considered a model of ingenuity for the entire league, and then kind of everyone in the NFL. There's at least been so many teams that have tried to copy his standards, hire away his staff, hire away his players. Model his scouting, model his direction for running a team. Do you feel this is going on?
This is a unique comparison. Because, yeah, you're right. Bill Belichick is revolutionary to the sport, 100%. Epstein kind of was, too. So in Moneyball, the Oakland A's, Billy Bean, he gets all the credit for analytics as well. Well, Theo Epstein took analytics to baseball to another level in some extent. And that's what his driving point on scouting is. And so I feel like a lot of teams are trying to copy his methods in terms of scouting. And some of the trades he's made, he's completely just owned people. And I feel like that's kind of similar to Bill Belichick in that aspect. So I feel like analytics and how he's revolutionized that for scouting is just as important as revolutioning some game way ways you play the game in the NFL.
Okay. All right. How about being able to succeed regardless of with so Belichick has succeeded with so many different styles of a football team, whether it be a shootout team, a team that runs the ball, team with stud wide receivers, team with no name wide receivers that are all under 6 feet tall. With his greatest stars, without his greatest stars, he just keeps succeeding. They have interesting stat. In Belichick's time without Tom Brady, he has a .722 win percentage. No other team has that good of winning percentage over the 15 years.
That's remarkable. That
Tom Brady's been around. Yeah,
that's remarkable.
So would you say Epstein rivals him in that matter?
The only thing I can say with baseball is kind of hard to compare. I mean, you're comparing. Okay, yeah, I'll say yes because some years he relies on pitching, some years he relies on hitting more.
Yeah.
So I mean, that would be the one comparison I could see that way. But I mean, we're talking about a GM versus a coach, and the GM really just scouts the best available talent and puts it on the field.
Uh huh.
So I mean, that I'll say kind of. I mean, it's kind of a hard question to ask. So I'm going to wrap this up here with just saying, give me your one name. Who's more influential to their sport, Bill Belichick or Theo Epstein?
I can't speak to it, Matt. I feel like because I'm kind of novice in the world of baseball analysis, so I'm kind of learning from your opinion. I feel like your opinion is kind of important. Who do you feel has a higher impact on their sport?
I think that Bill Belichick revolutionizes so much, and he got obviously very lucky in getting Brady, but he's also made a lot with Brady and without Brady. So I know more about Belichick, honestly, more. But, I mean, it's so hard to think about Theo Epstein. He's completely turned to historically franchise. Not just one franchise. He didn't just get caught with how Belichick stayed that one. Because he was awful with the Browns.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't awful, but he was not good. Bad enough to get fired. Or at least leave the Browns. But he was with one team now with the Patriots and had great success, and he got Brady, and things worked out for him. One thing that makes me think Epstein now, because he's gone from one historical drought of awfulness with the Red Sox and turned that franchise to 2 World Series. Now he's gone to the Cubs, who are the most historic worst team, and completely transformed them to win multiple, have the opportunity to win multiple World Series. So I feel like I'm going to lean barely to Epstein.
So it's an interesting debate. There's some big names that come up in basketball as well. I just want to point out some parallels that what you're saying makes me think of. It kind of makes me think of Popovich. Popovich and Belichick are obviously similar in the sense of their sustained success, run with a particular superstar player, revolutionizing the game, being the model for that. But then there's also guys that have been a little bit more behind the scenes, or maybe not throughout the history of the NBA. Pat Riley has had an extreme amount of success in
GM and a coach.
Yeah, GM and coaching, and then Phil Jackson won multiple championships at 2 different franchises. He won championships as an NBA player. And now some people believe the Knicks are on a rapid rise of improvement. So it's interesting. There's some important guys throughout sports. It's I'll definitely be interested in just kind of adds a storyline of interest to my life for baseball, the Cubs and Theo Epstein, because that's really just one of the things that intrigues me most about sports is like how one man's vision can sort of change an entire dynamic in something so big as professional baseball. So it's fascinating.
Completely agree, Bob. And the NBA is, as you're saying, Popovich, Riley, all these things, I definitely agree. And we'll wrap this up, but if you have, there's a good article on ESPN on Theo Epstein, just kind of sums up his career and just the way he thinks different. His charisma, the way he acts, the way he relates to every person in that building, from the janitor to the highest paid player to anybody on that organization. So it's a really interesting article if you can find it. But
we'll find it for you. We're going to share it on our Twitter after the show.
Oh, perfect. There you go.
There we go.
There we go. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a second.
Here we are, Lobo fans, back on the Rametown Riot, and we are going to give a quick breakdown of what to expect this weekend and what kind of things we see going on as the Lobos take on San Jose State here at UNM Football Stadium. What time is that game at?
It was at 1:30 on Saturday.
Excuse me. So it's been, what, almost a month since the last time the Lobos played here at UNM. The team has gotten off to sort of a disappointing start, a couple close games that we definitely could have won and arguably should have won, but we didn't get them, and this could be a good chance for us to get back on track, balance out our record, and hopefully give us a fresh start to the season, yeah? What do you think?
I think this is a huge game for the season. If this is literally going to be a telling moment of our season. If we lose this game and we fall to 1-3 and lose another game we're favored in, I think it's going to be very upsetting for the season and really put us back a long ways. But, I mean, the Lobos are 9-point favorites. We're playing San Jose State. San Jose State is 1-3 on the season. Has not looked very impressive at all.
Arguably the worst team in the conference.
Yeah, they have not looked good.
So it's a good way for us to start off conference play, with, especially coming off a couple of losses. Kind of nice for, I mean, obviously, Lobo fans, we got to go out there and support our team if we got any hopes for them this season. I still haven't given up hope on them. I think they've had a rough couple weeks, but they haven't actually looked that bad.
So I want to give you something. On their losses, they lost to Rutgers, as we know, 2 weeks ago. They had a bye week last week. And Rutgers last weekend lost to Iowa by 7 points. Iowa was ranked 13th in the nation a couple weeks ago. I mean, Iowa's a really good football team.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it just shows that maybe these losses aren't quite as bad as they seem, but the reason why they seem so damn bad is we should have won. We should have won. So, but it...
We could have won.
Could have won, you're right.
Could have won.
And but could have, would have, should have, the shit doesn't matter. This all matters this weekend, and it is now the Lamar Jordan show. Apodaca is out. The dual threat quarterback. Bob, do you have faith in him that he can lead us to... I mean, it's hard for me to say lead us to glory, but lead us to over the hump and make another bowl game.
I think so. I think Lamar Jordan, he's been in a situation that a lot of quarterbacks get into where kind of had to work his – had the position, had to work his way back into it through opportunity. Obviously, he's more seasoned, more experienced now than he used to be. I think he can get us to – I still have confidence in the Lobos. Dakota Cox is coming back, which is huge for us, the leader of our defense.
He's insanely important to that defense.
Yeah, and I just haven't given up on this team at all. I think a couple of close losses to teams that aren't as bad as they're made out to be based on their recent games, like Rutgers has looked respectable. New Mexico State has looked respectable. So it's just not the time for us to give up on them. We're going into conference play, and we've got a good football team. And when you have a good football team, there's the potential for them to win games. I'm not ruling them out of any games in conference play. So you gotta support them.
Yeah, I agree, Bob. We can't give up yet. Remember last year was a year where we won a lot of games in November and really turned our season around. And so let's see if we can do it again. Why would we give up? We're Lobo fans. Let's not be pessimistic. Let's not do any of these. Let's just go out there, root for our team, and
that's what we get too much of. We get too much pessimism on a team that has been on the rise the last few seasons, and we can't, like,
we're gonna calm our expectations a little
program
bit.
Gives up after a couple close losses. No, nobody. Just, you know, that we are a respectable program, and we're not fair weather fans. Gonna keep rooting for our team. And honestly, I think they've played well, and I think they're going to continue to play well. And the only difference is it's going to hopefully result in some wins where it hasn't the last 2 weeks, but still with a lot of potential.
Let's go, Lobos!
All right, Bob, let's transition now. A crazy week, a crazy slate of college football games this weekend. Three top 10 matchups. Three. That's insane. And first, nuts. let's go on to the biggest one that most people are going to be talking about is Clemson versus Louisville. Louisville travels to Clemson. However, Louisville is a 2-point favorite right now.
Oh, really?
Really. And this really comes down to the quarterback play, right? We got the Heisman frontrunner right now who's not the one we're expecting going into this game. And Lamar Jackson for Louisville been insane. His stats, if you guys didn't know his stats, they're insane this year. I should look those up and give them to you guys. But they're absolutely insane. And there's going to be Deshaun Watson, who is the Heisman, arguably the Heisman favorite going in this year, the quarterback from Clemson. So it's going to be so fascinating to see what happens here and who can prevail. What team is going to prevail? I don't know, Bob. What are your quick thoughts on all this?
I just think it's insane to have two teams that are so high up. Rated
meeting, number 3 versus number
meeting,
5
meeting early in the season. These are both teams that are potential playoff teams, and with how much a lot one of these teams is going to come away with an L on the record, and with how much a loss can mean for postseason play in college football right now, this is just must see TV.
I completely agree. Bob, you just pull up Jackson's stats real quick. Let's just throw those out there. So right now, he has over 1,300 yards passing for the season, over 13 passing touchdowns to 3 interceptions, and his running stats are off the charts as well. Let's see if we can find these running stats.
What a complete stats. Right here.
Okay, his running stats. He has, that's just per game. He's averaging over 100 yards a game, and he has 12 touchdowns.
Ooh.
He has 25 total touchdowns.
Through 4 games.
That's insane. But anyway.
This guy's nuts. 6'3", 205.
He looks like Michael Vick on the field, just taller. But yeah, so that's just my big thing. And real quick, prediction. Who do you think is going to win? Clemson versus Louisville at Clemson.
I got to think Deshaun Watson's going to take this personally. I got a lot of confidence in the guy as a top-tier quarterback. I've seen him do some remarkable stuff. He's at home. Lamar Jackson's kind of stealing his thunder. I mean, it's exciting. These are two of the best athletes in the game, two of the best quarterbacks in the game going at each other, but I'm expecting a big game out of Clemson. I think that team's going to rise up and kind of defend their own Heisman Trophy candidate.
I like to get behind them.
And it's a home game, man, and I just see it as an emotional building block for Clemson, and it gives them the advantage that they're at home.
Well, it's definitely a statement game for Deshaun Watson if he wants to win that Heisman. However, I am not going to take Clemson. I'm going to take Louisville.
Okay.
And the reason why is because their defense. Their defense has been so good this year. If you watch against Florida State, they demolished them. Defensively, they are really good. They have 2 first-round picks on their defense. And that is the difference that I think in the game. I think Louisville's defense is better than Clemson's defense. And it's going to come down to, obviously, turnovers and all these things. But I am going to take Louisville.
Okay. All right.
All right. Let's move on here to the second game now. Another huge, huge matchup. Switching conferences now to Michigan Wolverines versus the Wisconsin Badgers. And right now, Michigan is a 10.5-point favorite. That's insane. For a Wisconsin team that just came off beating Michigan State at Michigan State, they've already beat LSU this year, and now they are 10.5-point underdogs to Michigan. Don't you think that's pretty insane?
That's nuts. I mean, 2 top 10 teams. Michigan hasn't lost to anybody either, and it's at Michigan.
Michigan is blowing people out of the water every game.
Yeah, selling out a 120,000-person stadium.
Yeah, that stadium's insane. But Michigan hasn't really played anybody yet, so it's really interesting. And if you guys don't know, Michigan was my favorite team growing up besides the Lobos, so I've always rooted for Michigan like crazy. And Harbaugh, the Niners connection. Let's go, Blue. But either way, I just think that it's completely disrespecting the Badgers, who just came up beating Michigan State in Michigan State, and now they're 10.5-point underdogs. I mean, it just seems like a lot. I understand maybe 6 to 7 points, But 10.5 seems like a lot.
It seems like disrespect to me. I'm expecting that game to be close. Wisconsin doesn't seem like they're afraid of anybody. A ton of talent.
Good defense. Really good defense.
Isn't a Watt on Wisconsin?
Yeah, they did Watt's brothers on there.
Yeah,
well, J.J. Watt played for Wisconsin.
He's tearing it up, I believe, right?
He's a good player. He's a good player. Yeah, it's really unique. And I just found it dispersal. However, I am taking Michigan. I think Michigan is going to win.
Okay.
And I think Wisconsin has the toughest schedule to date in college football.
So, Matt, you were talking about Harbaugh. Let's harp on him for a minute because we don't get to college football talk too often. What the heck has been going on with Harbaugh? It seems like ever since he left the 49ers, he's become like some sort of like cultural figure, and people kind of look to him for stances on things. Have you noticed this? Like his Twitter, and he's doing... I can't think of any specific examples right now. Can you think of something of...
I mean, a lot of people ask him stuff all the time. Just because he is such an interesting figure and he's so passionate about so many things. Like, he was asked about Kaepernick. He's asked about a lot of things.
Yeah, they just ask him about things that are going on in the world.
Just because of it...
They don't tend to do that with every... not every head coach gets this type of thing.
No, they don't. Just because he is such a polarizing figure. His passion, his intensity, every way he carries himself, all these things factor into that. However, a lot of times he doesn't have good answers because he's a coach. He doesn't want to bring too much attention because he already brings enough attention to that program as it is. What are your thoughts, Bob?
I think it's funny. I don't know. I see him... He's making jokes about presidential races. He's making jokes about, you see Jim Harbaugh tucking an Allen Iverson jersey into his khakis.
Well, that was because he was doing those satellite camps. And what he did was really unique. Every time he had a satellite camp in a different city, he wore a basketball jersey or a jersey of some sort of a famous icon from that city.
It's just funny to see him be such a character because I always think of him as being being such a madman and kind of angry all the time while he's playing football. You know, he's just yelling at people, really passionate. But then it seems like he's got this funny side to him that people really seem to connect with, and it seems that it's come out a lot this last couple of years.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, he's a very intense guy, but I have a lot of people behind him. I heard Bill Belichick is actually really funny.
That's tough for me to see, but maybe he is. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know, but go.
His post-game interviews aren't funny.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Like Popovich I could see being funny because he's always roasting reporters, you know? But Belichick just sits... Hates it.
Well, he doesn't want to give any of the team ever any advantage on anything.
He never likes to say anything at all.
No.
He sits there... Oh my God! Are you stupid? It's like the look on his face the whole time he's talking to people.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah. Next question.
Next question.
So, I just want to touch really quick. Going back to this Wisconsin and Michigan. Listen to these three games in a row for Wisconsin. Three games in a row. At Michigan State. At Michigan. Ohio State at home. Three games in a row. Fourth game, just to, you know, maybe it's a loser. Oh, at Iowa. Okay. Like, this is, like, their schedule in a row is brutal.
Yeah, that's some tough scheduling.
Yeah, like, they will guarantee have the hardest schedule in the country. Afterwards, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. After, like, week 6, they're going to have the hardest schedule in the country. There's no doubt in my mind.
Say they come out of there 6-0.
Oh, then they're number one in the country.
Number one in the country?
Oh, I would guess.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Number one in the country for
Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State.
Can they do it?
And LSU.
Can they do it?
No. I think they're going to lose to Michigan and Ohio State. So, but I thought they were going to lose to Michigan State. So what the hell do I know?
Yeah, you don't know.
Exactly. All right, moving on to our third top 10 matchup in college football. You have Stanford versus Washington. Now, Washington is the team that nobody really quite knows yet because they haven't really played anybody, but they have a hell of a defense with tons of first-round talent on that defense.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, and going against Stanford, who's the powerhouse who just came back and beat UCLA in the final seconds last week. And This is at Washington, so I think that's really interesting. I think it makes the game more engaged that way, but Washington is 3-point favorites.
It's just must-see TV this weekend, I feel like.
Well, this is Friday night, which is a unique thing. Christian McCaffrey, the Stanford running back, has all the shining lights on him. Friday night, no other games on. Take the spotlight and run with it. Ha, literally.
It's just a week where I think college football is going to have way more intriguing games than the NFL's got this upcoming weekend. You know, like I feel like college football should steal the spotlight. I'm more interested in watching the Louisville-Clemson game than I am watching any other game this weekend. Excited that this game's going to be on Friday night, Stanford-Washington. So, great week for college football.
Great week for college football. And, tune in if you can. We're going to take one quick break, and we'll be back. All right, welcome back to the Ramtown Riot. We're going to cover a little NFL quick hits for you. And I have to start with this. I know this is ridiculous, but Fitzpatrick, man, what the hell were you doing last week? Playing at Kansas City? He threw 6 interceptions in one game. What the hell? I don't know if I've ever heard of something like that. That's like a freaking Little League Yaffle team that can't do anything but just throw the ball in the league in the air. Ugh. Anyway, I had to hit on that.
Not a good game. What do you do? But interesting stat. You know who the last quarterback to throw 6 interceptions in a game was?
Manning.
Peyton Manning, yeah.
Was that right? Oh, yes! Completely guessed that. Some type of
football genius over here, ladies and gentlemen.
He had one really bad game.
Line up and ask him any obscure football stat, and he'll pop it off in 1 second. And that's why we're all here, ladies, for the Ramtown Riot.
Okay. I will take it, but don't ask another one.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't know.
You're comparing Fitzmagic to
I'm always defending Fitzpatrick, and I don't know how I keep doing it.
He's a Harvard grad.
Yeah, but I kind of think Harvard grads are douchebags most of the time, dude.
Do you know how many Harvard grads do you know?
2. One of them was a douchebag. One of them a really nice guy.
So you have 50% chance.
50% chance that Fitz is a nice guy. In my mind.
All right, let's go to the next one.
Tragedy for the Houston Texans and hopefully not football in general, but J.J. Watt suffered a serious injury.
Well, he re-injured his back.
Maybe he's got such a persona as a tough guy, and kind of sounds like he might have rushed back too soon. And probably should have missed a little bit more time for consideration for his whole career, but he has been placed on injured reserve and is likely out for...
He swears he's going to make it back.
He thinks he's going to make it back.
So he's been on IR, I believe it's 6 weeks.
There's got to be somebody in his corner telling him, take this seriously because this needs time to heal.
It just seems like the whole situation was completely managed wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had the star of your franchise, $100 million man, and you're rushing him back from back surgery?
Insane. For J.J. Watt and his future, he could go down as the best defensive end of all time if things go right. But
that's a bold statement, but it's possible.
It's a bold statement, but it's not really that bold because if he stays at this current rate that he's at, he will definitely be considered one of the best defensive ends of all time.
Oh, he'll be considered, but the best is a bullshit.
It could happen.
It could.
It could happen.
It could.
Yeah.
All right.
He's great.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for a thorough recovery.
All right. Good. All right. I'll stay with that word choice. That's a good word choice.
I want everything to be 100% healed before the next time he goes out there and tries to wrestle giants.
All right. Another injury note. Dez Bryant has a hairline fracture in his knee. Doesn't that just sound painful as hell?
Fuck. Yeah. That sounds awful, man. I have tendonitis and I don't like to do anything. So.
Well, you know the remarkable part is he got hurt in like the second or third play of the game and he played the whole game with it. And the Cowboys are hopeful he plays this week. But how the hell do you play with a hairline fracture in your knee?
A hairline fracture, I believe the reason they call it that is because it's about the same width as a hair.
you're really going out on a limb on that one. But
I think that's what it means. Yeah. So I think it's very
thin. That sounds like some common sense there.
I think it's very thin fracture of the knee.
But still,
it's about as unserious as a fracture can get when you're talking about a bones as a hairline fracture. But
fair enough.
But that being said, it's still a broken bone. So, and that doesn't sound good to me. It's disappointing. Des Bryant's been one of the brightest young stars in the game, and to see him go have injury problems consistently the last couple years.
Well, it's just another frustrating news for the Cowboys. They're saying as day to day, week to week, and he's not even ruled out for this weekend's game against who? The 49ers, damn it. Let's go. They were so disappointed last week. Ugh, broke my damn heart.
I kind of think the 49ers suck.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
you're really helping me out on that.
Well, you just keep bringing them up. What do you...
All right. Let's move on here.
Last stat. This was really, really interesting. So, Aaron Rodgers, commonly perceived as the top quarterback in the game, and I'm not arguing against that, but this stat is pretty interesting. So, this week, he went against my Detroit Lions, and he had 129 passer rating. Before that, he had had 14 games in a row of not breaking a 100 passer rating.
What?
In the NFL, yeah. Pretty,
Aaron Rodgers, we're talking like the man. We're talking like probably the number one quarterback in the NFL. To put that in
perspective,
besides Brady,
the second longest current streak was Alex Smith at 6 games. So every other starting quarterback had logged at least one or two hundred. 100 passer rated game is it means you had a good game, but it's not uncommon. It happens every week, multiple times. So pretty surprising. Rodgers didn't get there.
Pretty surprising. I think it's a remarkable stat. We're talking about arguably the second best quarterback in the league.
He's the most talented quarterback in the league.
Yeah, and if you watch him play, he just looks like it.
Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy. That blows my mind. So, him Alex Smith, too. Alex Smith of all people, right? It also kind of shows how shitty Alex Smith kind of is.
So we're not going to harp on the NFL too long this week because we're going to get into it next week with our quarter season breakdowns. But we just want to give you some of our daily fantasy picks. We're each going
to
pick.
We do DraftKings to clarify. We do DraftKings.
Yeah, we pick DraftKings and we want you to have success and hopefully win some money. Regardless of whether you're putting down a quarter or $100 and whatever type of games you're playing. So we're just going to each pick a couple guys that we think you should definitely include on your roster. So you want to get started?
My number one, and I think it's as obvious, Melvin Gordon. The running back for the Chargers, he is going to get a lot of opportunities. And if you watch the Saints on Monday Night Football, they couldn't stop anything. Like, they were awful. Devontae Freeman and Coleman both scored over 20 points in fantasy. Two running backs on one team. It's insane. So,
There's no other running backs that are active.
And New Orleans on a short week is traveling to San Diego. So, I mean, I think Melvin Gordon has the potential for a huge game, and that is going to be my first player.
Guy that I would be encouraging people to pick up, Cam Newton.
All right.
Most expensive quarterback in the league, and kind of debatable as
big commitment.
But let me say my case for picking him up. They're playing against the Atlanta Falcons. Their running back is down. Atlanta is allowing some of the most rushing yards in the league per game, and Carolina's desperate. I just see most talented player on the team. I think he's going to be taken into it. Taking
so you're thinking
it into his
running
own hands.
And passing, he's going to score a lot on.
I'm predicting multiple throwing touchdowns because I'm not impressed with Atlanta's defense. I'm thinking blowouts, and I also think he's where some games he might be hesitant, but this is a must-win game for Carolina, and I think I'm expecting them to pull out all the tricks, and one of their big tricks is having a 255-pound fast quarterback that can scramble and score touchdowns in the rushing game. So, yeah, I'm expecting a huge game for Cam Newton.
I can't argue, even though he's extremely expensive. My second one here is Terrell Pryor, he is really cheap on DraftKings again, and it doesn't make sense to me. Did they not watch his game last week?
Just consistent disrespect for the Browns. I think that, everyone thinks the Browns suck, so everyone on the Browns.
But if you get the ball in your hands 30 times a game, you're probably going to put up some fantasy points.
Terrell, yeah. I mean,
he played quarterback, receiver,
running back, and safety.
What the hell is going on in Cleveland?
The Terrell Pryor's their guy, man. It's like when we played elementary school football and we played.
He's the face of the franchise now. It's freaking weird.
You play everything. Terrell Pryor's the guy. He's lining up.
That's what the team's called. Just Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, they were named after Brown, but now they're named after Pryor, the Cleveland Pryors. But how often do you see this type of thing in like high school football, where the best player is the safety and the quarterback, and he returns the kicks.
Yeah,
but at the NFL, for this type of thing to happen, is just insane.
I don't know if that just shows that the lack of depth or talent in Cleveland. Or that Terrell Pryor all suddenly became so good. Either way, I'm putting him on DraftKings. I think he is a very if he was on the Patriots with his skill set, I think he'd be a really good receiver. And I think the opportunity, he had like 15 targets last week at receiver. I think the value is insane on DraftKings. Who do you got, Bob? Who's your next player?
Anybody on the San Diego offense I'm picking. I like Rivers. I like I like Melvin Gordon, of course. You already harped on that. I like their wide receiver options of Tyrell the Gazelle Williams, the young rookie, and Travis Benjamin. They're not expensive, and they're all likely to blow up. Every team is blowing up against the New Orleans Saints. That defense looks awful. Phillip Rivers is one of my favorite quarterbacks in the NFL when it comes to putting out a competent offense every week. And I'm expecting big things out of him. I think that's going to be a high-scoring game, and I expect any one of those guys to be a good value play.
I agree. I wouldn't play both receivers at the same time, but I definitely think at least playing one of them is a valuable option.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. We haven't done this in a little while. We've taken a little break. Oh, okay. We got one more thing. One more thing before we do this. We have a couple players that we want to talk about off the waiver wire. Just really quick to throw some players out there.
For your fantasy football.
For your fantasy football leagues, not daily fantasy.
Go, guys, you should pick up. We already said Terrell Pryor just looks like a guy that's being utilized in so many ways. He could definitely be a valuable player going on in the season. If he's available in your league, we encourage you to pick him up.
Next, we got Jordan Howard. He's replacing Lankford in Chicago as a primary back. And I think it's just because of opportunity. We don't know how good he is yet, but he's going to get the opportunity. So if you have a number one running back on a team, it's a valuable piece to pick up.
How valuable are workhorse running backs in fantasy football? You know, if you have a guy that's on a timeshare, that's on a running back by committee, one week he blows up for 15 points, the next week he gets you three. It just takes away kind of that variability when you have a guy that's likely to see almost all the touches, and that's what we got out of Jordan Howard.
All right, I got one more for you, Bob.
For sure.
This is a complete dark horse. I guarantee it'll be available in your league. Orleans Darkwa. I didn't know if I said that right.
Orleans Darkwa.
Wait, if Rashad Jennings Vereen's out for the season for the Giants. But if Rashad Jennings doesn't play either, he's going to have all the opportunities as number one running back for the Giants. So it's just opportunity again. If you're really struggling at running back, throw him in there because he's going to get the carries. And for a pickup, it's easy. And for a pickup, for sure. They're playing the Vikings, tough matchup.
But probably still available in
95% of the
league. A lot of the league. So a sleeper pick, if you're in a deep league, if you've had a lot of injuries, Orleans Darkwa. Cool, cool, cool. And with the Rapid Riots. We kind of laid off on it for a couple weeks, but we're back.
Let's go.
Rapid Riots.
All right, Bob. So how I'm going to start my Rapid Riot is we were discussing this, and just the legendary players of all sports that are retiring this year. This list is crazy. Like, it's literally, if you stop and think about it, it really kind of blows your mind. Yeah, Peyton Manning. Arguably the best football player of our generation. You had Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant of this generation, maybe the best basketball player. He's up there. Tim Duncan, he's up there as well. I think Tim Duncan's better than Kobe Bryant. You have Kevin Garnett, who's a fantastic player, revolutionized the, how the big man played in the NBA. You have David Ortiz, the Red Sox, great player. Alex Rodriguez, besides the steroids, whatever you do, he still is insanely big. And his home run levels are crazy. And then not to leave somebody out, Abby Wambach, arguably the best women's soccer player of all time. Like, you have, going from sport to sport, you have all these legendary players retiring at one time. So I think it's just really unique and something to appreciate.
Just an entire generation of stars that we've all grown up with. More this year than any other year I can remember of just everyone. Those are three of the biggest names in the history of basketball. Peyton Manning broke almost all the records as a quarterback. And two of the biggest stars of my lifetime in baseball, Abby Wambach.
I believe you had a little something somebody wanted to say about Abby Wambach or one of these players. Who? What was this?
I wanted to say, who the fuck is that? And here we get to my rapid riot as we got, I'm just going to let Conor McGregor say it.
Look around you. You got a lot of champions, a lot of grizzled vets. Who do you think would give you the hardest fight out of anybody on stage?
Right here, the hardest hitting 145 pound, the real hardest hitting 145er, right here. This guy TKOs people. When I knock people out, they don't fucking move. Who the fuck is that guy? You know damn well who I am. Who the fuck is that? Oh my god. I don't know, but I think that guy.
So that's a soundbite from UFC 205 presser. Fighter Jeremy Stevens is trying to promote himself, trying to hype himself up on the level of Conor McGregor, and Conor absolutely verbally decimates him, and his entire career degrades him in with one simple sentence. And it just kind of shows, like, we're dealing with an incredible combination of a guy that's at the top of the fight game, but also just can outwit and outspeak just about anybody.
His marketing strategy isn't crazy.
Yeah. Hilarious what he did to Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah, great.
And that's probably going to be, like, the thing that we remember his career for, which is a shame. But I don't imagine him getting any bigger than that as being completely tool. That's going to be an internet meme. It's going to be up there with the red panty night. UFC 205.
Yeah, we'll get a lot more on that.
Hell of a card. We're looking forward to it. Yeah, if you guys haven't checked it out, we got three title fights on that card. A lot of the biggest fighters in the sports. And UFC coming to MSG is big time.
Yeah, we'll definitely cover that pretty intently when it approaches.
November 12th, so we got plenty of time. But anyways, I want to thank you all for checking in with us again. Another great week here at the Raymetown Riot. We'll be back. Next Sunday, like I said, we got our NFL breakdown for the quarter season. And,
yeah, if you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter, Raymetown Riot, or hit us up on email, raymetownriot@gmail.com.